Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you. It's your favourite podcast. And thanks to Bumbabipra Media 98.7 FM, we have voted number one podcast in North Korea last year. And thank you, Kim.
2017, remember that meeting where we're sitting down having a yarn? He goes, yeah, they're going to go down this too as a delaying tactic. What a conversation to have that night, you know. And here it is. Here we are, kicking the can down the road. That's now 2017 to now, 8 years roughly.
Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you, and I hope you're doing well wherever you are listening to the program, because it's your favourite podcast. And thanks to Bumbabipra Media 98.7 FM, we have voted number one podcast in North Korea last year, and thank you, Kim, for that. But we're doing very well, and every time we mention North Korea, someone's listening. And, you know, we can't talk about the other stuff, you know, that's got to do with war and this, that and the other. So we say those keywords and people listen, which is fantastic. But what we were here about seriously today is to talk about the state-based treaties. We've talked about this a bit, and we've talked about it with academics and traditional owners and many others. So I thought it would be good to focus on it being quite relevant now in Victoria. A few months ago, I was in Nam or Melbourne, and they had just finished the Walk for Treaty, and that was I was there at the final day when they arrived into the city and made speeches and things like that. I didn't say much at all, but I just went there to support them because it was something to do, and I was in the town at the time. So it was good that they had a lot of energy and spirit there. But when you peel it back, you know, the state-based treaties, let alone us mob talking about it, inside the internal conversation with the Australians, the academics, politicians, you name it, community groups, they're all divided still. And, Ganyara, I'll bring you in here because it's one of those things where let's look at it for what it is. It is a contractual agreement between Australians. If you're Yorta-Yorta, for example, and your traditional boundaries go across what today is described as New South Wales and Victoria, which is these Australian descriptions, it doesn't mean that much to you because it's only half of whatever it is that they're talking about. You know, I think it's really important to peel it back and look at what it is. It is a political game. Even media pundits are questioning it, both right and the left. But what's your take on it again?
Well, you wanted to call it for what it is, if I remember you just saying that. Didn't Nigel Scullion, Senator Scullion, say it's a can-kicking exercise? 2017, remember that meeting where we're sitting down having a yarn? He goes, yeah, they're going to go down this too as a delaying tactic. What a conversation to have that night, you know. And here it is, here we are, kicking the can down the road. That's now 2017 to now, 8 years roughly. I think it might have been October or November, somewhere there, and we spoke to him about it there. So 8 years later, we're now kicking the can down the road for what? Because Australia don't know what to do. Australia's got no sovereignty proper. And this is the crazy part about it. Does Australia have real sovereignty? Because the Uluru Statement says coexisting sovereignty. Now, they acknowledge that the First in Time people, by the way, the Aboriginal nations, the sovereign nations, the first sovereign nations that were here, are still here and being the true owners. Now, when I use the word treaty in amongst people, black or white, doesn't matter. When I use the word treaty, they think about nation-to-nation treaties, you know, these formal agreements between sovereign nation to sovereign nation, those who's doing what, power-sharing arrangement. So are they really doing that? These state-based treaties, are they really doing it? Of course they're not, because the states are not sovereign. The states are subject to the Australian Constitution, Section 106 and 108. Just go and have a look there. It'll make it very clear. It says, subject to this Constitution. How plain, how simple is that? So a state, and there is case law on this where the in the High Court where the justice said, you know, the colonies were never sovereign. They were never sovereign persona, where they could go into the international world and do agreements, do treaties and all that sort of stuff. And then he goes, and the states today are not, they are not the same as that, you know. They're not sovereign.
Yeah, but I think it was John Howard also that said the colonies were settled without treaty or consent. So you've got the judiciary saying it. You've got the executive, because he was prime minister, obviously. But there still hasn't been any movement within Australia because, for whatever reason, they just can't get their act together, or they don't want to get their act together.
that's more the case, I feel. They don't want to do this. They can't cross this bridge. It's too dangerous for them. It's too far away from them. Because when they cross this bridge, say they do a treaty with us proper. I mean a proper nation-to-nation treaty. They will have a deal with us, but they won't have one with the neighbouring mob. The neighbouring mob might have aspirations of doing a deal with someone else. You just don't know. So it's very, very dangerous grounds they're treading on. But you mentioned John Howard in 1992 on John Laws. He got up there and said a nation does not do a treaty with itself. It cannot do a treaty with itself. It's a proper treaty, unless it's a private treaty, by the way. There is a usage there that they're using real estate. A private treaty is where I want to sell my house to you, for example, and we do an agreement there. That's a private treaty, but not a treaty where there's power sharing arrangements in place between nations who are established on like constitutional grounds. So a nation-to-nation treaty.
Even a private treaty would be subject to challenge because if it's been done in Australian dollars, for example, then that brings the Australian law into the situation. If it's an Australian land title or Australian contract, then obviously whether it's private or not, it's still going to be contested if it's on Yidinji territory especially.
But why are they given 3% of the population in Victoria this so-called treaty? Now, this so-called treaty ability. Now, here we are, the 97% whitefellow or Australians are going to do a deal with the 3% Australians, you know, just because of their heritage, their background. Now, that's racist all of a sudden. But I'm starting to think it's more on the lines of fraud. You know, using words in language that means something that everyone else would think, you know, this is the normal usage of the word treaty, you know, because you don't ever hear anyone say, when I bought my house, it was a private treaty. You always hear this, oh, well, I went and bought a house. So, you know, I just bought
we settled, we did whatever. Yeah. And I got your limb there, Bob.
Just to add to that, like, it was the first time in the paper, I think, my wife was reading it to me, that house sold by private treaty. Like, it's now becoming or attempting to become common talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, so they're trying to get this word treaty into everyday language. But it's not a treaty. What they're doing in Victoria, because 3% of the Victorian population are doing a deal with the 97% of the same population, the Victorians. Now, I see in the articles that they come out, you know, the state of Victoria has done a deal with its Indigenous population. Mm. Its is a very possessive word. You've got to remember that. It's not the Indigenous people do not belong to the state of Victoria. The legal identities that they're seen through belong to the state of Victoria, but those Indigenous people have a right to go back to their other identity, like Yidinji are using. We'll go and create one in our world. And our one is created subject to laws that are first in time. And we are actually acknowledged as having sovereignty, true sovereignty. So we can do a proper treaty if we so choose. But is Australia proper sovereign enough? Because where's its territory? Where's its homeland? Where's its place?
Yeah.
Now, we go back to Senator Scullion. We said, Nigel, at the same meeting, we were talking about the treaty stuff, we know you can't do a treaty, Nigel, because you don't have somewhere to rest your constitution. So we said, okay, here's your land title. Here's a land title from us, giving you a piece of land to make so you can have a territory so you can negotiate as equals on a treaty. Oh, I think it was the Navy base. What a pretty cool idea that was. And it was like it had leprosy on it, you know. They didn't want to go near it.
We could put the big red button there.
But it was just funny the way it all played out. It was so like it did have leprosy, like it was poison. No one wanted to touch that land title from us to them, so they could put their constitution on a piece of land, cold, hard, physical land, that they could then say, this is our territory. And it would have been confined to the Navy base, but that's all right. Then they can negotiate as equals. You know, they could have come to the table because we got territory, where's theirs? Mm. We got population, where's theirs? You know, we got a foreign minister, where's theirs? But they didn't have the territory sewn up. They don't have this big continent called theirs. It's not theirs because they mentioned in Uluru, but that belongs to the owners who are the first sovereign nations here, which, oh, by the way, their sovereignty coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown. But does it coexist with their so-called sovereignty? Ours is first, so they acknowledge we got sovereignty over the place as owners. We're everything, not ceded, unextinguished. We're here. They can't have it because they can't have sovereignty over one piece of land by two authorities, because sovereignty is the ultimate power on that piece of land, that territory, that given area. So how do you enter into a treaty if you're Australia? You can't. What have you got to offer? You got nothing. That's why I'm saying that for the Victorian government to be using this word treaty, there's a class action in the waiting here. There's a class action coming up. It has to. Now, either the Aboriginal Victorians take the Victorian government to task, and by the way, you mentioned your order, I see theirs as the only unfilled seat on that Treaty Council thing. You know, we went down and saw them in 2018 and said, look, this is the true state of play. You know, these aren't treaties. They're just a total waste of time. It's a can-kicking exercise, as Nigel mentioned. So let's have a yarn.
Yeah, I think what I find strange, and I don't know that this is going to be for the actual assembly and things like that, but for example, if you're on a land council that's on, let's say, your country, and usually the land councils, the people who come in from other mobs' country can sit on the land council and make decisions and things like that. I'm not too sure if that Victorian assembly is going to be the same, because if I moved down there, and if I was an Australian, that is, I become a Victorian, and then I can be eligible to sit on that body. But this is the thing now. It has to be done per tribe, and even like, you know, I'm reading the Good Word Day, the Book of Joshua. Joshua went and they went with a scroll and described each of the clan's territories of the tribes, because they were told to do that. And that's where I think it's really important that the tribal nations sort of, whether you agree with Israel or not, but it's written there for it's good case law. And, you know, for tribal nations to understand that their first-in-time law allows them to create land title and everything else to correctly describe things, what we often talk about here, that's where the focus should be. State-based treaties may be an interim point. I don't know what people think in terms of why they went down that track. Maybe they needed to get an extra benefit to push their sovereignty over the line in some other way. We don't know that. But all I can say is that the leopard can't change its spots. And if people continue to deal with that animal may trick them into it, but it's always going to keep acting the same.
Look, you mentioned an Aboriginal person up here, hey, Yidinji. They've been seen through their legal identity created inside Australia. Now, they can move to Victoria. You know, say, okay, I don't reside in Queensland anymore. I now reside in Victoria. You've got every right, because you're now an Indigenous Victorian, you've got every right to participate in that down there. No ifs, no buts about it. That's been made very clear by the constitutional experts. If that's the case, are you talking about tribal law, the original law, or are you talking about Australian law? It has to be Australian law, because if you were down there talking about, as a Yidinji bloke, talking about something down there in that part of the world, then you deserve all the punishment under tribal law. So it can't be tribal law. It can't be the first-in-time sovereign nations, the one whose sovereignty is there first, and they claim coexist with the sovereignty of the Crown. No, you're all inside Australia. You're all trespassing down there, no matter what you are. You might have Indigenous heritage to there, but if you want to be seen through the Australian identity, you're trespassing. So all identities are trespassing down there. It doesn't matter where you are. This is the very problem with that. Why should someone from up in the islands, Torres Strait Islands, have a say down there? Why should someone from West Australia have a say down on someone else's country? They can't under law, and they shouldn't under law, but under Australian law, all Australians are trespassers. The whole lot. And this is where the treaties are fraudulent. This is where they're wrong. They're giving people the wrong idea.
Yirlin.
Yeah, no, just it's sometimes a difficult concept to come to terms with within the continent that Australia calls Australia. When you're an Australian with that ID versus being a First Nations man or woman, and the concept of different IDs. And yet it's as soon as you convert it to, if you lay the map of Australia over the map of Europe, it then makes a lot more sense with what you're saying, because you've got, if you're in France, you don't get to go to Germany and decide on all the German aspects, or you don't get to go to Italy, you know. And yet here the confusion sort of is a little bit more guarded around that area of states and so forth, and Australian, but I'm Indigenous, and I'm not Indigenous, but all Indigenous Australians. And that's what Yidinji is saying, that we have a completely separate identification, the same as Italy is to France. It's a completely separate identification to anything that's in Australia.
Yeah, it's really important to understand the colonisation mind, the mindset. The colonisers will come to you, they'll choose you, your area, they'll first of all try and kill you, then they'll take your children, Then they'll remove any skerrick of identity from you, like language and cultural practices. They'll shave your head off to do this or whatever it is, or punish you. Then they'll put you in one of their schools to learn their way of speaking and their cultural protocols and traditions and things like that. And that's what colonization does. And what I see and what I've seen when I went down this pathway is that the Aboriginal flag, as much as someone went and designed it, that's fine, somehow became the flag for all the Aboriginal and men and women on this continent somehow, magically just said, oh, that's ours. Yeah, we're one of those. Yes, but where is your tribal flag? Where is your national identity? And that's what this is all about, okay? So people come up to me and say, hey, you know, I'm this, I'm that. Yeah, I know that. But in your pocket, what is it in there? Because that's what Australia wants to see. They want to see the Australian ID. The Queensland Police will ask you for an ID, and that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. What I do have an issue with is that this truth-telling exercise has to be full disclosure. And the full disclosure is everything, and somehow you're saying fraud may be being committed. And not only that, you know, governments can be liable for that.
Look, governments can sue and be sued. And what they're saying here is fraudulent. It's misrepresentation. It's everything wrong in the true sense of the word. When you think about this, why don't they come out and say to these Aboriginal people, this is not a treaty, by the way. This is just an agreement where you can have some say on some matter that affects you inside the Victorian Parliament. These are all Australians. You all use Australian identity, which is, once again, the state one subject to the Constitution. So, you know, if it offends the Constitution, they can get rid of that treaty. And by the way, the opposition down there come out recently and said, look, when we get to power, we're wiping the treaty thing anyway. It's going, okay? So if you get your treaty in now, don't sit in the seat too long because you won't have it there if we get in. So this is what's coming out. You know, people should be aware of this, that it's absolute. It's just a racket. It's a scam. It's fraudulent. And they're giving people false hope, misleading and, you know, misleading them down a path. And the Aboriginal people go, oh, gee, we've got sovereignty. I only had it said to me yesterday. Oh, look at them Victorians. They've got a treaty. Oh, why can't we get one in Queensland? Think about what's being said. Why can't we get... It's not a treaty. It's not a treaty. You know, I tell these people and they get so disappointed. They get downhearted. Oh, they're telling lies. I said, yeah, the government tell lies. You know, they're not telling you the truth. Understand, if they told you the truth, you'd go back to your tribal nation, you'd go back and rebuild it and revitalise it and bring it back to life. And when that happens, the Commonwealth of Australia has a problem because their constitution has no lawful or legal right to be here. How, under what doctrine, I keep asking this all the time, what doctrine does Australia have to allow its constitution to be here? How did it acquire sovereignty? And I ask the academics that, and they go dead quiet, and a few of them go, oh, we don't have one. We know you don't have one because ours is here, ours is right. And when I say, well, you say you acquired sovereignty somehow by some, you know, genius stroke, but aren't you a manifestation of colonialism? Because I'm glad you mentioned colonialism. That I think Senator, what was her name, McCarthy down there, said, oh, Aboriginal people should be thankful for colonisation. We give them running water in a tap. They had the Murray River flowing down there. What? And it was clean. There was no, they had the food in the river. But now you've got to get running water out of the tap and you've got to pay for it. Then you've got to pay for food. Oh, we give you hospitals. We give you all this Centrelink, for example. They didn't need that. They had all the wealth given to them. You know, as the Creator said, here, this is your land. Here, it all is for you. But then the white fella come along and take it all and say, now you're poor. Now we'll give you some Centrelink that you can bow down and kiss the feet of the government. Oh, look, we'll give you $10.
Give you my ID and all those kinds of things.
I don't mention all of this. it's crazy, absolutely crazy.
It is crazy, but there's good news, and that's what, the Yidinji Nation is being built and in terms of its modern persona, and that's what we're here every week to talk about and to at least have people think about it and talk about it, even... That's awesome. So anyway, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition. We'll be back after the break.
Up in the sky, so far away, there is a place for everyone. Moon and the stars, they always shine out on that ocean way. And as the lazy wave rolled by, breeze is blowing memories. Oh, yes, yes, say to me, are you from TI? Are you from TI? Where the wild, wild Wangai tree goes? Are you from Torres Strait? Any place, including St. Paul Bay? Any place and just around by Mario Bay? Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Where the wild, wild Wangai tree goes? Are you from Torres Strait? Any place, including St. Paul Bay? Any place and just around by Mario Bay? Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. Listen, for those people who aren't familiar with the Yidinji Territory, the Australian description is around the Cairns area, the rainforest mob and a reef, you know, where Nemo lives, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, 3 years ago, the government created the Yidinji Chamber of Commerce, and at the time the Chief Minister was Gujugudju Gimoibara, and he, with myself, launched that, at the pier there. And 3 years later, it's celebrating, obviously, its birthday, and Vico Sun joins us now, the Minister for Small Business and Innovation. And Vico, the Chamber of Commerce recently had a celebration of the third-year anniversary, and the Chief Minister Bumi was there. Tell us how that went.
Yeah, thanks, Mormo. Look, it was a really, for me, it was a really important event. It was the first event that I attended as the official Minister for Small Business Innovation. The chamber is growing. There's a lot of excitement around the YBN, Yidinji business number. It does give you that freedom to operate without the restrictions of other jurisdictions that aren't really designed for you to grow, flourish, and commit to contribute to your local community. So I'm very proud of what we're doing with the Yidinji Chamber of Commerce. People are using the SYD. That's our sovereign Yidinji dollar. It's attached to our wallet, so we can actually spend that quite easily. It's fee-free. So in my view, it's as good as cash. And we need to go back to that cash environment. We don't have a cash environment within Yidinji because the world is moving digital. So we're preempting what the world is doing anyway. The YBN isn't there to control you, not going to lock you in 15-minute cities. We're not going to fine you when you're doing 105 kilometres an hour on a road that's got no other traffic. You're not going to get pinged for, you know, getting SMSs from the government saying you've done the wrong thing. So that's what we're moving into this digital age. And I'm really proud of what we're doing with the Yidinji economy and helping the communities grow by making profitable businesses.
No, that's deadly. And one of the things I love is that the amount of businesses that are joining, and majority of them small and family business run local mob. And that's really important when you... the backbone of any economy is small and family business. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, you know, they're the first to go when big companies move in, and it puts a strain on that. But, when I was living as a young fella and used to go to the swimming pool for 20 cents and, you know, all those stories, and a lot of the businesses were for example, the first ever Chinese restaurant was run by Alan Wong, and his family were next door. And then they had like general stores and a lot of small businesses at that time. And everyone sort of knew each other. And that was a really good community building type of environment. But now it's very difficult and for small business. And I think the Yidinji ecosystem is really important because you can hold a Yidinji business but continue in your other world if you want to do other stuff. I think that's where we're very flexible. But I can see it growing very quickly. I mean, 3 years, it's done pretty well. But I can see in the near future more people being recruited and joining to actually help rebuild the Yidinji nation and support families and everyone that we want that live here and call this place home.
Yeah, as Ganyara and Yoruba say, and Morimo as well, you know, we do have the right to self-govern in this nation. You know, we are doing that, and part of that governance is providing a structure for business to flourish, and the backbone of every economy globally is small business and innovation. Without that, economies die because big companies get to a point where they just draw on the economy. They don't grow the economy because they just get stagnant. So innovation, small business, motivation, entrepreneurship, it's getting really difficult to operate in that world now because of the amount of legislation that stops people, the amount of fees you have to pay just to do anything in that traditional world that we've been living in for a couple hundred years in Australia. We need to get back to where small businesses really do grow. And small businesses become larger businesses employ more, they produce more, they contribute more to their local community. So it's critical that Udingy builds a really strong small business and innovative mindset, allowing innovation to come to Udingy territory, set up shop. We're moving into that AI robotics world, means that factories don't have to cost $10 million to set up anymore. You can set up factories inside your garage, and you can produce things very easily with 3D printing, with AI and robotics, and that employs other people. You know, we're not going to be going back to where we were 20, 30 years ago where you needed massive factories to set things up. You can do it a lot smaller scale now and produce stuff from a small business point. And then as you get the funding, which is not getting drawn away with legislation and fees and requirements and taxation, you can actually grow that business to a very big size, which means you can export to the Australian economy and the global economy off your Udingy territory.
Now, we've had this conversation before, and but I wanted to sort of talk about that, is that I know that there are a lot of Aboriginal families that are really good artists, and, you know, sometimes they'll walk to a shop and people will take the art and sell it on consignment or you know, it's very difficult because it's a... Our mob needs stuff straight away, for example. But when we talking about the Udingy ecosystem, we're not just talking about here. So if someone comes to us and who's an artist, for example, wants to sell their products, we're developing a system where that product is being advertised or promoted around the world because of what we're this modern day direction we're taking with our digital ID, digital money. So these are things where now not only are we trying to create those pathways for mob, but also take them to another foreign market rather than just relying on people coming to Ghimoy or whatnot. So that's a really big thing where you're opening up the whole field to the art and potential people who want to buy it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You've got a lot of people that, you know, you're never a hero in your own town. We've got some absolutely fantastic artists that produce wonderful work, like world-class artwork on country here, but they're not heroes in their own country because they don't get to have that global exposure. So your network is your net worth. So being able to connect up with international markets and offloading those originals, if you want to sell the original, or offloading prints for that, is something that we're really encouraging and allowing artists across Australia really to connect up to international markets as well, because they actually love our artwork.
Ganyar, I'm going to bring you back in here. In terms of what we're discussing, the Chamber of Commerce, the SID, at some point in time, all businesses, whether they're Udingy or not, are going to have to accept SID, because that's rule of law is healthy for contracts, for example.
The Udingy dollar is the currency for the territory. No ifs, no buts about that. Australia, because their current manifestation as, you know, as a colonial state, which is what they really are, they don't have the right to have their Aussie dollar here. You know, so but we've got a lot of Australians. 97% of people are Australians now on the country. If you're a true sovereign nation, you will be able to enforce your ability to use the currency. You got to. So if they had true sovereignty, they could force us to use Aussie dollar, but they can't. They don't have sovereignty. We can put whatever legislation we like together. If they had true sovereignty, they would enforce all their legislation upon all things, all persons and things on the territory. And that's an important concept. If you don't have proper sovereignty, and it can be shown, and it's shown legally and lawfully, they know they don't have it. Why aren't they now enforcing upon us when we brought about the Currency Act in 2015, when we brought that about, why didn't they come and stop us? Because they don't have proper sovereignty. They don't have the doctrine to force their stuff on us. When we started to bring about the Reserve Banking Act, Why didn't they come and shut us down? We brought about the Birth, Death and Marriage Act. Why didn't they come and shut us down? When we bring about all this legislation, which we've got, it's a pretty fair swag at present. When we bring that into play, why don't they come and shut us down? Because they cannot shut us down. They don't have the legal and lawful right to be here, which is very dangerous for Australia. Now, we could make legislation which could cause harm to Australia, which would raise the concerns of the world. And we've got every right, by the way, to develop an international persona so that our Yidinji dollar can be seen overseas. It can be traded, whatever. You know, the Aussie dollar is not the guaranteed money for this part of the world. They don't have the right to be here. We have the right to be here. They don't have it. What are they going to do? They need to talk Turkey about, what were we talking earlier? Treaty. A power-sharing arrangement so that they can have their Aussie dollar here, for example. Now, money is an important part of any world, you know, especially in the make-believe world that we're all being forced to live in. You know, we talk about the legal identity. Where's that created? Is it created on the ground here? Is it created subject to our law? Is it created subject to their law? Now, the Constitution is the grund norm, the basic norm of everything for, like, the Commonwealth of Australia. That's their Constitution. Our Constitution is the grund norm for our world, our legal and political world. That's how the two worlds come about. But they don't have the right to have theirs here. Now, if you want to be seen through, and I keep saying this to everyone, you are not the identity. You are seen legally and politically through the identity. You hold your card up. That's not you. That belongs to them.
Yeah, it's like when you're playing Monopoly, you're not the little car or the little dog or whatever it is. You're using that to get around and go to jail and not collect $200.
Well, actually, you mentioned that. Everyone likes to think that birth certificate is money. It's absolute total BS. That is the entry point to allow the baby or the human to participate in the life of the state only. There's nothing else attached to it. The real value is attached to the tribal nation. Now, go and read Article 28 of UNDRIP. The state must give back all our junk, all our stuff. It's got to come back.
Coming back to what you were saying there, sorry to cut you off there, but we talked about the SID and how that sovereign capacity gives us the ability as a nation to write law for and on behalf of the Yidinji nation, that is, you know, the Yidinji citizen, the Yidinji national. And one of the things, when I looked recently last week, the Commonwealth of Nations have now harmonised all digital assets jurisdiction regulations. They've got a template. So you're seeing that happening. You're seeing the world being, and the Bank for International Settlements is talking about harmonisation and how stable coins and central bank digital currencies, for example, or any other digital assets must now sort of have some sort of flow across different platforms. Yidinji is already well in advance. Not only are we leading those conversations, the very fact that we beat China, we beat America, we're beating Australia easily in these areas. But the only issue for us is that there's only maybe 300 people using it. And that's fine. But the point is that it's the reason why the world is looking at us is because we are pioneers. The irony of that is we're moving forward, and this is about survival. It's got nothing to do with, you know, how many Rolls Royces I can buy and all that kind of stuff. But we're up against the wall, and this is our only recourse available to us. We're going to have to move into this space, survive, not only do that, make it secure for generations to come.
Look, we got to get people clear in their mind, the human is not the legal identity. Whether we created or Australia created, it's irrelevant. They are not the legal identity. It's not theirs. The human being, the walking around thing, is just like any other animal, just like the cassowary, just like the kangaroo. They walk around and just do and survive, and they just do stuff. But the modern world in the science of law has evolved to have all this BS involved. It's just total rubbish. You got to have a identity. Now, let's go back to the legal identity, the Australian one. Okay, you're going to be seen legally through an Australian identity. What money are you going to use? Oh, you got to use Australian notes. So the identity belongs to them. The money belongs to them. So you're going to use the identity that they've created for you, that they own, use the money that they give you to use because it's their money, and you're going to go and buy a car. Congratulations, you just bought Australia a car. How well have you done? You know, this is their property. What's owned by the slave is owned by the master. Understand that part. The slave is the legal identity. That's how you participate in the life of the state. So you're going to use their gammon money, at their gammon titles, to buy a gammon house because the house belongs to the blackfella. It belongs to Yidinji here. the real house and the real tree in the front yard with the little white picket fence really looks pretty. That belongs to the local mob. Until that's paid for, by the way, under Articles of UNDRIP, the UN Declaration, until it's paid for, it belongs to the owner, and that's the mob. Australia has no right to sell off our little white picket fence to give to someone as a house. But we're going to come along being Mr. Nice Guy, saying, look, we don't want your money. We want to give you your house title. We want to give this to you. And, you know, look, governance has cost in this modern world. And everyone goes, oh, they should be giving them away for nothing for free. Hang on a sec. The white fellas have benefited immensely off the back. Now, Australia was not built on the back of sheep. It was built on the back of the Aboriginal nations. And people hate it when I say that. They said, oh, we done all this hard work. You had no right to come here to do the hard work. Give it back, as the article says, give it back or pay for the place. Until it's paid for, it belongs to the mob.
And you know, mob did build the railroads. Mob did
and they didn't defend, get paid.
Yeah, they defended the imperial, you know, empire.
Stolen
and all that stuff.
Stolen wages.
Oh, and everything else. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. There is a an importance here that the Yidinji is setting the stage now, and people may not be able to understand or comprehend this, Vico, in the years to come, because the world of crypto and central bank digital currencies is still quite fresh for people. So people are usually more interested in real-life matters, like, you know, a lot of mob are obviously on dialysis or going to school or looking after kids. So it's not like everyone can just go out and study digital finance. But the point being is that the Yidinji Nation is moving, and you have some history in obviously this world, but it is leading the way in terms of how Indigenous nations especially can express sovereignty and, use their own unit of currency and money.
Yeah, the biggest problem that we have in the world now is we've been operating globally under a financial system that he who controls the money controls the world. And now with digital assets, digital currency, CBDCs and cryptocurrencies, the payment rails are shattering. There's so many different ways of transacting and transferring value between two people, whether it's across a counter, whether it's across a state or across the globe. The payment rails that we were locked into with the Australian dollar that had to be sent through the SWIFT system over to America to buy your products. With digital assets, we can actually plug into a completely different payment rail, which gives everyone freedom. So because people don't like change, and AI, digital assets, it's only very new, but it's evolving extremely fast. And most people think yesterday was the best way of operating, but it's actually the world has changed and payment rails have changed, and you can function at a much freer level using the digital asset payment rails, which Yidinji has embraced. That's why we have a digital ID. We have a digital currency, and that digital ID will be part of our future. The governments are going to push it through. I don't think that the security of a lot of the governments has been looked at really heavily, because we've got quantum computing coming out now, and also the payment rails and allowing to people to send money or cryptocurrencies from Europe to pay for artwork, to pay for locally manufactured goods on country here is becoming a lot easier, freer, instantly, so we can operate in a much more efficient way.
What I think also is another big factor in the whole picture is that Australia's finance system called BEX is nearly at its end, but by 2030 they have to bring in a new system. The Yidinji Nation has already built that system. It is well advanced, far more advanced than the Reserve Bank of Australia or anything that Australia has at the moment. There's a few things that are interesting at the moment, Gunyara, is that Westpac has been successful, or NAB, I can't remember which one, in doing a cross-border stablecoin. I actually met with the banker and had dinner with the banker that overlooked that particular project. And when I showed him our things, he was gobsmacked, to say the least. But to know that there's this little blackfella nation up in the north that are well and truly in advance, and well beyond that, because Australia has to move 26 million people with it at the same time, whereas Yidinji, we move quick. We don't have to wait for Canberra to make a decision. We do it here, and we do it in the interests of the elders and for the future generations.
Actually, everyone's interest is at stake up here. And this is the important part about it. Remember, I was saying the human is not the identity. The digital ID is not you. That's how you participate in our world. And when you participate in our world through this digital ID, remember, everything's all gammon in that world. no matter where you live, in America, in South Korea, in England, in Canada, you're all living in a gammon world. The money's gammon. It's all make-believe. Now, the current system that we have in place is all based on debt. Anything to do with the Australian dollar is a debt-based note. There's debt attached to that note. There's not physical, cold, hard gold attached to that. So you can't go and swap your debt-based note to get some gold back of the same value. So this is what I'm saying. The material world is different to, well, the physical world is different to the digital world. Understand that you don't have anything of any real value other than your own life and your labour. And the most important thing that a human has, the most valuable thing, is time. And people will sell their time now for something based in debt. Okay, get the thing in your life that will give you the best benefit for your limited time on earth. We all only have a very short time here, so you want to make sure that what you get can store your wealth of time. That's all money does, is just store your time. So you've got to be able to make sure that it's going to be left there and not be eaten away by government. Now, I was looking at some interesting figures only a couple of nights ago of how much debt's in America, and there's talk about bail-ins coming to the US where they just haircut your bank account. What happened when you get up in the morning, you had $100 in your bank, all of a sudden it's cut in half. You got $50. What happens? What happened to the other 50? Remember, when you put money in a bank, this is an important part, when you put money into the bank, you're an unsecured creditor. You actually lend the bank your money with no security. Now, that's a really intelligent place to be. Why not go to a government that has every right to create this stuff, to every right under legislation to create ID, create proper currency, create whatever we need to make sure that all humans get a fair go here. And that's what your dinsy are doing. We're not believing that Australia will look after anyone. We're saying, no, we don't believe you. That's why come to our world under our sovereignty, the one that's been here all along to look after all humans.
Yuren, I'm going to bring you in here. I know that you and Bumi have had these conversations about how the Yidinji government would reinvest profit, for example. So, you know, you talked about any company or business on the Yidinji territory who has a massive profit doesn't necessarily give it to the government. It goes to the cultural components. It could be for whatever it may be, you know, like a songman event or cultural things that will empower the local community. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you see that working?
Yeah, of course. You know, like the biggest danger of moving forward and being innovative and leading the world in the areas we have is the thinking that we carry with us from the world that exists the way it is now. And one of those things is the idea that I sort of touch on a few things. One of the things you said before, you know, the master and the slave concept of the obligation of your identification. When you obligate yourself in an Australian ID, you become under that law. And in the sense that you can also do that within Yidinji, because we have ID, of course, but we're moving forward in a different way. That if the master is, what would you say? If you're working for time, and that's something that Ganyara just brought up, working and being paid for your time, you're actually being paid as a slave, because you're valuing yourself the same way that you would value a commodity in the current world. You're being treated like you are something like we might treat goods, cars, whatever. The only real way that you escape the master and slave model is that people are being paid for being human beings. What is it that they need to be and attend their job and do the best work that may be? And whether that's economic or whether that's cultural, that's not the point. It's how we pay and how we value ourselves. If we keep valuing ourselves based on the way it is at the moment, which is based on your time or your qualifications, none of these things should be something you paid for, because those things are uniquely you. And the model that Yidinji proposes is that all people receive their payment for the work they do based on what they need to be able to do that work, not based on any other model sort of thing. So that makes a big difference in how we look at things from that perspective. And, of course, what you refer to, Murumu, was the model moving forward with business and so forth. You know, it's not about the business The economic world is responsible for supplying the goods and things that we need physically as human beings. And that if they don't make a profit, well, they're not going to be successful. So profit is the first thing that has to happen with any business. But once that profit is exceeded, the obligation then becomes to the whole community. How can the businesses work together to generate enough profit to ensure all cultural activities are free for all people? So cultural activities are things like education, health and well-being, and environmental protection, spiritual exploration, whatever it might be. Artistic work, you know, you brought that up before, Marua. An artist should be could get paid for the artwork that they do. But the reality is that the artwork that anyone should do should be because it's coming from their heart. Any cultural work comes from the heart. So the work that you do with that sort of thing is basically free to the world, but you still get paid based on what you need to do it. And it's just a different way of looking at the world.
Danyara.
Look, I agree with what he says 100%. Let's go back to what that Victorian MP said about you get running water with us. When you come into Australia, because the Aboriginals should be thankful for the running water, the colonialism that brought running water. Hang on a sec. It was their water. But what they've effectively done by bringing you into Australia is weaponised the money. They've actually weaponised that to say, if you don't toe the line, we'll turn your water off. It's your water in the first place. They're going to turn it off. Why? Because you've played in their world with their identity and their money. So they've actually weaponised the money, the currency. So if you don't toe the line, they put a sanction on you, for example. That's exactly what it is. We won't let you have water until you toe the line and become a good Victorian, by the way, that wants to go and do some sort of gammon treaty. If you don't do that, you're not going to get the water. You're not going to get the food. You're not going to get hospital. If you want to don't toe the line, we're going to sanction you. And this is the problem with the world of money, their money, is that as an Australian entity, they can control all the things that happen within Australia, which is why we had to step back to where we are to go back to the first in time sovereign nation to create the betterment for all humans here. Remember, humans and the legal identity are two things. The money or the currency that you got now, the fiat currency, which is debt-based, is not the real money. Gold and silver is. Why don't they bring it back? Because those slaves are not allowed to have anything of value that belongs to the Aboriginal people, because that's their property. The gold and silver is theirs. So they create something out of thin air, just like what we've done, but we've done under legislation. And this is the important part. The Aboriginal people have to go back to their original law, like what we've done, and said, okay, the government's back. We're going to now enter into this new world through our, and I would call it international persona, the Yidinji government. That is the international persona for all the Yidinji people in the territory. And we're going back to there, so now you can see us in the gammon world. We all have all the gammon stuff. We're going to be just like yous, but we're going to be first in time. We're going to be authorised by the first in time tribe.
Well, it's the gammon stuff that the tribe has given permission to be here. That's the difference. And, you know, when we're looking at what is valuable, is it money or is it tribal knowledge? For me, I'm here to make sure that tribal knowledge continues. Not because I'm a tribal knowledge holder, but we want to look after those families and individuals that have that important knowledge and wisdom so this place can still function based on proper law. Because that's the true wealth. It's not about gold and silver even. It's about the Yidinji way of life or Kunganji, whatever people identify with, right? That's the most important part. But inside of Australia, that's not the focus. And there may be a lot of good intent inside of Australia, but ultimately it's still the same results. Look at the last 40 years. That's all you're going to have to do. The evidence is there. Get a scientist, get whoever. But it's one of those things, Vico, that nations are built because on truth, and people want freedom and all these things that the Yidinji nation already had.
That's correct. You know, we shouldn't be paying for the resources that we walk on. And everything's been monetized now, and we've got to pay for stuff that was actually really in the custody of the tribal elders. Now, they were custodians for a very, very long time, and that custodyship is still there, but it's been taken from us because it's all got a monetary value in it. Now, what's really sad to me, we've got over 3,000 councils around Australia now. You know, they're three corporations, Aboriginal corporations, all around Australia. Yet in every community that I go through now, I still see kids walk in the street in the middle of the night. I still see and hear the stories of my daughter going to school where the kids aren't engaged in learning anymore. They're not being treated right. They're not progressing. They're not learning. They're not actually engaged in their own culture anymore. And that the money, the fake money that's being handed out to these corporations isn't doing the good that it's been promised to do. And it's really sad to see this next generation being lost and their parents have been lost as well in the same process. Because it's been a long time where this system's been operating and parents and children of those parents are totally lost. They have nowhere to go because the monetary system has abandoned them.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break with some final comments.
Hey everyone out there, my name's Benny Hodges. I live in Canberra, but I'm back home, and every time I'm here, the only station I listen to is BBM. So say Geronimo,
say Geronimo, say Geronimo. Yeah, welcome back to the show. Some final comments. Yurilim, we might start with you first.
Yes, the magical possibility of controlling your own destiny. And that's certainly what all the nations of this country had. You know, look what happened when colonisation arrived. As part of the whole process was the system that we are now living under, which is not the one which is ideal, as many people will testify. So, you know, Yidinji is here to help people move in the direction they need to.
Vicko, we were just talking about earlier about how the Yidinji government is pro-culture. I think that's a very important message for people out there because, you know, things move slowly in the other world, but they also move back quicker.
Yeah, look, once people are made aware of a new paradigm, the way they think, they do change their mind very quickly. You can love someone and hate someone, then love someone else very quickly. So engaging in culture gives you that connection to earth. You become more respectful for something other than yourself when you lost that respect for yourself. Once you respect a tree, a kangaroo, a flowing stream, then you gain some sense of identity in yourself and you start respecting yourself better, which means you're putting better food in your brain, in your body, you're learning, you're putting better knowledge into your brain, and that comes out through your actions and what you do on the planet.
And Ganyara, some final comments?
Yeah, look, I was just thinking then when they were talking there about there was a Chinese leader come out recently and said, look, what do you people want? We can give you freedom or we can give you wealth. Which one do you want? And they overwhelmingly chose wealth. So we'll give up our freedom to have wealth. But I asked everyone, what is that wealth? You tell me what it is. They said wealth, and they didn't say a debt-based note, but that's exactly what they took wealth in. So remember, what's the most important thing in your life is the freedom to make choice. But once you enter into that world of so-called wealth, you're not wealthy. You're actually poor. You're actually, I like to say, you know, people, humans, you know, especially like the workers, are the lowest paid, I'd say, prostitutes of the world. And I'll use that word because people are selling their time, just like a prostitute does. She sells her time. And look, I don't have an issue with that. That's how someone has to make a living. That's so be it. But you go and work hard for your labour. You know, you go and bust your boiler out in the hot sun and you're getting $10 an hour, you know, or $15 an hour. What are you? You're very low paid compared to someone else who can go and earn good money in an air-conditioned room. So wealth is an illusion. You can't take wealth with you. It's what your time is worth. Time is everything, and that's where the real wealth lies, is your time. If you're free to not be tied up to that system of selling yourself, then you have far more than anyone who has all the money in the world, like Buffett. He claims to have a lot of money, but he's going to meet the maker at the end too, just like everyone else. So 100 good years of freedom would be far better than anything else dying at the age of 50 or 60 with all this money. Think about it.
And that's it for Black Law Tribal Edition. Thank you for your company. We'll catch you next week. May God's peace be upon you wherever you are, in the almighty name of Yeshua, because he is the light of the world. We'll catch you next week. Come on.